हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Text 221. But how can one attain Brahman by worshipping a human prince of the Yadu dynasty? The Lord answers, I am the basis of that Brahman. I, standing before you, am the form possessing full varieties of bliss and knowledge. I am the basis, the supreme shelter of the Brahman. Pure knowledge, just as the sun, being the form of plentiful powers, is the shelter of many rays. Arjuna expresses a doubt to Krishna. From worshipping a human born to Devaki, as a prince in the Yadu dynasty by actions of Sattva Guna, how can one attain Brahman? The answer has been explained already. I am the Lord endowed with infallible spiritual energies. My birth is simply by making an appearance in Devaki, who is also spiritual energy. Vishnu Purana describes Devaki as follows. You are the subtle spiritual energy. My birth is like the sun rising in the east. I have said previously in the Gita, Ajopi son of Yayatma. I am unborn and indestructible. Bhagavad Gita 4:6. I am not born as a human like other princes, attaining a human body after previously earned knowledge and piety have been destroyed. Thus it is not astonishing that by worshipping me you can attain the Brahman. For one who has attained the sun, it is not difficult to enter the rays of the sun. Right? So here this puts it also in the balance. Like, why are we talking about Brahman? Right? Because generally we're not that, favorable when we discuss Brahman. But here we see as Rupa Goswami is discussing, because Brahman is the platform of spiritual. It's just the natural spiritual platform. Right? So that's the whole point. It means for us it's just a place to work from.
Yes.
Right? For the Mayavad is making it a goal. So when we say exclusive monism, that's the problem.
Yes.
The point is it's Brahman, it's transcendental, but at the same time there's form and activities.
Mm.
You know, does that make sense?
Yes.
So it'd be like, and then one could look at it, but they take it so much and so we're an alternative. But let's put it into a perspective. Let us say you had somebody who wanted to do, you had two people that wanted to attain an office, right? They're doing the same work, going around looking for places, talking to people, you know, about rents or this, leasing, you know, the electricity, whatever it is the process you have to go through to get an office, right? Now, one of them, having gotten the office, now he's going to do business or whatever it is like that. But the other one, just getting the office, that's it. Now he's just going to sit in that office, and that's it. That was his goal. Now, what are we going to say?
Stupid.
Yeah, there's something wrong. So that's the actual position of this impersonal concept of Brahman. That you get to Brahman, and then that's it. That's the goal. The actual point of Brahman is therefore perform spiritual activities within Brahman. Does that make sense? So that's why we don't have any problem discussing it on this platform. The impersonal platform, then, you know, we have no end of, you know, snide comments.
Now,
yes.
It seems that the issue really is from the beginning of the cultivation of knowledge is the acceptance of the source of Brahman.
Yes.
So they don't accept us from the very beginning, therefore there is no need or any appeal to go beyond Brahman.
Yes. Yes. Because they think it's nirguna, that there's no qualities. Yes, it's nirguna meaning no material qualities, but it's saguna meaning the spiritual qualities. But the point is those qualities then are appreciated when they're manifest through form and action. So
here.
That's, no, I mean here, but in any case, but that's Bhagavan.
Yeah.
If you only accept the lack of qualities, that's only the Brahman platform. Right? And but the higher Brahman platform is you accept that it may have qualities or that you're not worried about that. You only understand just the Brahman aspect. But still, it's not complete. Because all it is you're getting to the spiritual situation, the soul, which is Sat, Chit, and Ananda. You've gotten yourself to the Sat platform. Because Chit and Ananda means activities and their resultant experiences are gained in a place. And that place is eternity. Right? Because when we think of very noble qualities or noble ideals, we think eternally. That feeling is eternal. So, but the point is you're going to do something. We don't think that on that platform I'm going to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like that. That's the thing. Something will happen. That's the.
So Brahman realization just means realizing our true identity.
Yeah, just realizing I'm not the body, I'm the soul.
That's it, yeah.
Right? But then that's your lower. Then higher is that I'm not the body, I'm the soul, I'm servant of the Lord.
Yes.
That's the natural position. The other one means you don't have enough knowledge. You know, that's the fun part. The ones with not enough knowledge are called jnanis.
Yeah.
But now, why are they called jnanis? Because ones with even less knowledge than them, they're called karmis. Right, because they're just into the fruit. Those who know more know the fruit won't get you the happiness you're looking for. So they have a little more knowledge. They're called jnanis.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that their concept of Brahman also won't get them what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
It's only devotional service.
So, I can never understand why Mayavadi sannyasis like Prakashananda, why do they study Vedanta?
Because that's
in the Vedanta?
Vedanta describes the soul. So Vedanta can answer questions that the other five can't. So it's the highest of the philosophies.
But isn't a Vedanta tapping into the Srimad Bhagavatam? What are they doing?
The point is you see what you want. They're studying Vedanta and they're basing that on Upanishads. But they only accept those aspects of Vedanta that are about the oneness. They don't accept those ones that are about the difference. So that's why Prabhupada, when he talks about monism, he talks about exclusive monism. He says the monists, a monist is an exclusive, their philosophy is exclusively monistic. That's the difficulty. Because the point is there's we saw ourselves, Rupa Goswami is giving verses, and in one verse it's talking about the oneness, the next verse is talking about the difference. So they just see one and not the other. So for us, it's the Lord is one. He's everything. He's non-dual. Right? There's only Himself, but there's various aspects. So one of those aspects is the personal, those aspects are the impersonal. But the point is the personal is the support of the impersonal. Because the impersonal is basically just the effulgence of His qualities. Because if it's impersonal, you don't see the manifestation of those qualities. So when he manifests those qualities, that's then what gives rise to the Brahman. So actually, the personal form is the basis of Brahman, because Brahman is simply the effulgence of that, like it says here. The sun rays are coming from the sun.
Yes.
The sun rays don't stand on their own. They're coming from the sun globe. So in other words, the personal form of the Lord is the source of the Brahman. Is that? So all it is just they, because now the point is to actually understand this, because it is Krishna. Krishna you can't understand on your own by logic. God's beyond logic. Right? Because logic means you have to depend on the material intelligence. Material intelligence is limited to functioning in the material world. Right? And also just the size of how much intelligence you have. Like Brahma, he has four heads. Right? So now, and he's a lot bigger than us, and he needs four very big heads to manage the universe. And we're going to figure it out with one head, and it's small. You know, so it's just, it's not really going to work. But, so, he has to reveal himself, because he's beyond. So if you have the proper attitude and the approach and the proper process, he reveals himself. Right? So that's the point. Like if you have the right attitude, you go through the right channels, then you'll sit down in the room, and it might even be that the head of the country or that comes out to see you. Mm-hmm. Right? Like that. But the point is that's just, he's allowing that. You use the wrong things, you try to crawl in the back window or something, you don't see the God. Right? Like that. So there's a process. He's a person. You follow the process, it works. You don't follow, it doesn't. It's not, no, I'll do whatever I want. So that's the difference, is you have to surrender, at least in theory, that you accept that this is the way it's going to work, I'll give it a try, let's see what happens. Right? And those who have that attitude find that it works. And the more they have that mood of surrender, of appreciation, then the greater the reciprocation. But those who think, no, by my own intelligence I'll work it out, they never see. Like that. That's the difficulty. They can't. So the Mayavadis, because they're not willing to surrender, they want to maintain the I'm the controller and enjoyer, because the whole idea is I become Brahman, not that I merge in Brahman and I just become part of Brahman. I am Brahman. And so what does that make me? It makes me God. And then what will be the benefit of that? I will enjoy Brahmananda, the ananda of being in Brahman. So it's all about control and enjoyment. So it's still material consciousness. That's why they never actually get there.
That's what Prabhupada says, they still have to come back.
They always come back.
Be active in the hospital.
Yeah, no, they always come back. They never actually make it there. It says only the demons make it there, or these great sages who simply just understand only the Brahman aspect of God. They're not inimical. But the Mayavadis are inimical. Because for the impersonalists, they can be a form or not. They're not worried about the form and the pastimes and rasa on that level. The Lord's there, he has his pastimes. But they're only seeing the Brahman aspect of it, the transcendental aspect. In other words, the Lord's activities are transcendental. That's all the farther they see. So they're on the Brahman platform. So when they come in contact and they taste those activities, then they move to the higher level, because they are transcendental, so they can distinguish between one aspect of Brahman and another. But Mayavadis, by their philosophy, there is no distinction. They can't tell the difference. And so they end up doing mundane activities when they want to be nice guys. So they never make it. That was what was explained before. They get up there, they get to that platform, but they can't remain because of the pride. They fall down.
So when it says that Mayavadi is covered Buddhism,
yes,
it's kind of overstated, because Buddhists don't even have the concept of the soul or even the existence of God.
But it's the same. The only difference is instead of when you remove everything, there's just a void. And you remove everything, and there's just a light. That's the only. And the one is, it doesn't accept the Vedic conclusion. The other one, it does. So one's based in their own scriptures, and the other's based in the Vedic. That's the only difference. So because of that, since it's based in the Vedic, so they'll dress and all those things like it. But otherwise, it's just covered Buddhism. That's directly just. That's why if you deal with Buddhism, you've dealt with Mayavada. If you dealt with Mayavada, you've dealt with Buddhism. Because philosophically, it's the same. They'll have their own kind of terms in that. But not even generally. Even the Mayavadis, they get pretty tantric. Because they get into Shiva and Devi worship. But I think the Buddhists get a little more tantric.
They get very tantric.
Yeah, so ritually they're more tantric than the Mayavadis. But the basic point is that's not Buddhism. Tantra is not Buddhism.
No, it's not Buddhism.
Yeah, so, and they picked that up from, because they made these, they converted Karmakandi Brahmins into Buddhism. And the ones that impressed them the most, since it's really a mode of ignorance, this kind of thing of getting rid of the Vedas and that. So therefore, they became attracted by those Karmakandi Brahmins that were in the Tantra. Like that. Yeah. So it all comes from this side. That's the interesting thing. Yeah. It's the Bengal side is the one that impressed upon them.
Yeah, I studied them. It all happened around here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so when they went to Kamakshi up north, they showed him some tricks and they were impressed. So then that's when they brought it in. And then from that, one branch went into, because the Buddhists also had a branch, which is a Bengali branch, which was, they were Buddhists, but they didn't accept that you needed to study scriptures or follow any ritual. And the name of their lie was Sahajayana. Ring a bell?
Sahajayana.
That's Sahajayana, just like you have Mahayana, Hinayana, Terayana, they had Sahajayana. But it was Sahajayana was only in Bengal.
Right.
And so Sahajayana, then when the Vaishnavas came, all they did was add Radha Krishna into it. So again, no philosophy, no rituals, it's just all about, you know, Radha Krishna. Because they have, as the thing, because of the tantric, then they have the masculine and feminine principles. So if the masculine and feminine principles, Shiva and Devi, or Radha and Krishna, to them it doesn't. It's not a big deal.
Is it a fact that Jayadev Goswami was close at some point?
Who knows? These kind of persons, it's not worth getting involved in. Because these are persons that the Lord arranges so that certain things get established.
Right.
So Jayadev Goswami, Sridhar Swami, It's not worth getting into and trying to get too detailed about them.
Because the scholar is identifying that he was hanging around with the tantra.
Scholars, it's kind of means. First of all, has the scholar ever been over here? Have they ever dealt with? Do they know what they're talking about? Because if it says tantra to them, it simply means shakti.
Yes.
But there's Shaiva tantra and there's Sattvika tantra. We follow Tantra also. So yes, he was a Tantric. He is a Vaishnav Tantric. So he follows the Sattvika. Tantra simply means ritual. Mantra means the chant, and Tantra means the ritual. So all it is when you're dealing with Shaiva and Devi Tantra, all you have is ritual. Right? There's not the philosophy doesn't take it much beyond. They're only interested in the ritual gets me this result. But they use tamasic methods instead of, you know, more sattvic methods. So that's what I'm saying, is that, I'll tell you one story. I went to, dealing with these, you know, very big Indian musicians. I mean, the ones that, you know, they're the ones playing in Carnegie Hall and you know, what's the one in London, the big one?
Albert Hall.
Albert Hall, and this level of guys. And when I went there, I had lots of questions because I had, you know, looked at books and different things. You know, I thought, you know, prepare myself. And then I started asking questions. And, you know, I started asking a few, and then when I asked a few, I said, where are you getting your information from? Or I said, well, I got it from these books. And he says, oh, academics. He says, they don't know a thing about Indian music. He says, because they simply look at it and try to analyze it according to their system. But he says, they don't know anything about the music, experienced it, and dealt with it. So how they put together just what immediately seems to work. And because they're doing a paper that no one else does, who's really going to know? When they present their thesis, is there an expert musician in Indian ragas that's going to, therefore, you know, come up with doubts? They're just going to see that the academic method was followed.
That's right.
You understand? So then the weakness comes is that they'll be just like, let's say in Buddhism, let's say we take a, you know, top university. Now, let us say you have the professor, you know, in Tibetan Buddhism. Right? And he's giving his lecture and he's giving his things. Now, somehow or another, by some wonderful arrangement, he's able to arrange the Dalai Lama to come and speak. Okay? But now, within the academy, which of these two is actually the authority on Buddhism? The academic, not the Dalai Lama. That's the weakness of the system. Is that the people who think they know, but they don't. Very few are doing something. It's just like in science, how many are quantum or right there on the edge doing something? How many are in the laboratory doing? A few do. So then you can say they know something. Understand? But most of the time it's just built on that you follow a discipline to train your intelligence and mind in a certain way so that you view the world in a particular way. And then from that, then you can have very nice intellectual conversations. But the point of the conversation is never to come to a conclusion. Because as soon as you come to a conclusion, the fun of the discussion is over.
Well, not a scholarship.
Yes, so the whole point. But the Vedas, you start your scholarship from conclusion. And then you use intelligence how to apply that conclusion practically into your life. And so therefore, the Vedic scholars, who are accepted as scholars, they're the ones that can apply it. So that's the difference between the two academies.
Yes.
So that's the problem. So in this you have to be very, very careful. Because if you're going to quote on Buddhism, the modern academics, it's not going to get you very far. If you're quoting Buddhists, then you'll have some basis. But otherwise, then, you know, it's like there, you said there's a lot of difference between the two. There's no difference between the philosophy is exactly the same. All it is the evidence is coming from the Vedas instead of from their Pali scriptures, that's all. And even what they have in the scriptures, that's perfect. That's not what Buddha himself said. So Buddhism actually disappeared during the lifetime of Lord Buddha. It never actually made it beyond that, because his disciples then took up and got involved in this conflict. So that's the weakness. Because Buddhism means you move around. Every day you move. And then at the right time of the day you go begging. Whatever you get, you eat that. You know, you stay there, you have more discussions, and then the next morning you leave and go to the next place. There is no temple, there is no ritual, there's nothing. That's Buddhism.
No monasteries.
Nothing. So these are all introduced because they picked them up from. So they've added them all in. So it's not actual real Buddhism. But the philosophical points, the essential points, of the soul disappear, all that kind of stuff. That you can take back. But their whole process is how they're going to do that. You know, stare at a wall for 7 hours or something like that. Then that's new.
The Four Noble Truths?
Sorry?
The Four Noble Truths to reduce the suffering?
These come up. That can go back. But the point is we're talking about the actual philosophy of what's the nature of God, what's the nature of the soul, what's the nature of the material world. We're talking that stuff. What's your process? What's the result once you get there? That's where what they say and the Mahayana say are the same.
Yeah.
Because that's where your philosophy, that's the core, the kernel of it. Then these other things, these are things that support. And like for us, the service to God is the main thing, that element of that. Varnashram supports that. So they have all these supports of good qualities. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's here is that then he's going to get into it. So that's why Krishna is saying it's not difficult. If you've attained him as the son or the person, then automatically the Brahman platform of transcendence is automatically obtained. You know, that's so that's why we don't separately endeavor for it. But we're endeavoring for worshipping Krishna, right? As a person, in bhakti. But the point is where is the Lord situated in which he performs his pastime? In Brahman, in transcendence. So that means you want to develop that love for Krishna. So that means if you're going to develop love for Krishna, you're going to express it. And that means you're going to interact. And interact means you have to be on the same Brahman platform. So the Brahman platform is already included. Is that make sense? You know, it's just like, yeah. So that's okay. Okay, text 22. The words Amritasya Avyayasya mean of the eternal liberation. This is the key. Because there's temporary liberation, there's eternal liberation. So what the Mayavadis can get, like that, that's temporary liberation. What the devotees get, that's eternal. Shashvatasya Dharmasya means possessing Bhagavad Dharma. Aikantasya Sukasya means of one filled with Prema Bhakti. Bhakti Rasa. By this, the bliss of impersonal Brahman is condemned. Right? Because the bliss, so we're not interested in the bliss of Brahman, we're only interested in the situation. The bliss is what's in interaction with Krishna. So that's why it keeps coming up, because we many times think getting to the spiritual platform, that's what we want. No, we want to serve Krishna. That's done in the spiritual platform. Like that. Just attaining the spiritual platform, the happiness that comes from there, that's not what we're worried about. You know, it's like you're outside, it's hot, you get into the house, it's very cool and pleasant. You know, so you revel in the niceness of the house, but what about the people in the house, the interaction, the relationships? So if all you're doing is, you know, thinking about how nice it is in the house, someone comes in, oh, hi, yeah, okay, I'll later, oh, this is so good. You know, you think something's wrong with this person. So that's the position, is that there's something wrong because it's not about the person. We're people. So it has to be about God as a person.
Spiritual autism.
Spiritual autism. You're saying my body. Spiritual autism. Okay, yeah, they don't have any social ability to function, right? Okay, yeah. They follow their rituals, the life goes okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can see that. Brahma Samhita thus says, I worship the effulgent supreme Lord Govinda, whose effulgence is the undifferentiated, unlimited, all-encompassing Brahman, which is completely distinct from its display of unlimited planets throughout billions of universes. So the Brahman is still distinct from its display of all the planets, but the planets have come from Brahman. Because they're a manifestation of the impersonal qualities of Brahman that have just been made in, you know, manifested in matter. So that's why this place works on that platform.
Yes.
Yes.
It means that the devotee is aware of Brahman.
The devotee is very much aware about Brahman if they understand. Like, we don't have a problem with Brahman. The problem is that if you end at Brahman, then we have a problem with that. So that's the whole thing. It's just like anywhere you have a goal, but if once you get there, all you do, you don't do anything.
Yes.
Everyone say that, you know, he got a house. Oh, what's he done with his house? Nothing. You know, the only goal was to get it. You mean he's not renting it, he's not fixing it up, he's not taking care of it? No, he's doing nothing. He just wanted the house. You'd say something's wrong. Right? So that's the temporary position of temporary liberation. It's all about that. Eternal liberation means then it's about what you're going to do there. Does that make sense? So the one includes the other. It means the personal includes the impersonal. The impersonal doesn't include the personal. So that's the point, is they're exclusive monists. We understand the principle of monism. But it's not exclusive, because there's also the personalism. So therefore we don't have the difficulty discussing it, because for us it's just a situation. But for them it's the goal, it's everything, it's their ananda. For us the situation's not the ananda. We're not worried about, we're in Vrindavan, it's so great being in Vrindavan. We're about, you know, what service you do to Krishna in Vrindavan. Because the point is if the place is so great, then doing something in the place must be so much better. You know? It's just like sitting, you know, you sit there and look out the big, you know, how you say, wall of window there in the morning, and the beach is there and the waves are coming in. It's nice. But now, the people that go down and swim in the ocean, they'll say that's better than looking at it. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that we understand the position. So it's a position. being at the beach, it's a position. Then you can walk on the beach, you can go swimming in the ocean, you can do so many things. Yes.
Vishnudas Kaviraj, the Swami says that when they attain the Brahman, they think, now that's it, that's finished. All of our studies, all of our austerities, all of our penance, this was the purpose. And now we've understood, I am Brahman, so that's the end. But he said, yeah. When the devotee realized Brahman, he said, no, this is the beginning. Now the chanting really begins, now the hearing really begins, now yes. Service really begins. It's being done with like feelings.
Yes. Somebody says, so that's actually where it starts, because that Brahman platform, we call it Brahma Bhuta. The generic term is mukti, a liberation, but the term we use specifically for devotees is Brahma Bhuta. That's the beginning stage of bhava. So that's where now the serious chanting and reading and associating begins. Right. Okay, this verse is a proof for the statement that the formless conscious Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna, who has condensed consciousness with a human form. This is formless consciousness of Brahman. So now that where he's interact, that's the form. So it's not that's the point. There's no different. But it's not that the formless is the origin. The person is the origin, right? The point is though is that effulgence that is generic because anybody can take advantage. Like we say, the sun is there for everybody. But people who don't like the sun, they stay in the shade. So they don't get the benefit of being in the sun. So that's the whole point, is that Krishna's there as a person to interact. But if we don't do, then he just responds as Brahman. Because in the material world, people simply look at qualities. They want something called, because this is good, or this is nice, or this is wonderful, or this is, you know, beneficial, or whatever is their quality they're looking for, their security, their affluence. But these are qualities of the Lord. So they're only looking for the quality, but not connected to the Lord. It's the quality and the facility of the quality. It's not about actually the personal. So even we have, let's say it's wealth, but the point is we want wealth as a general category. So that's the principle of Krishna. And then when we get wealth in the form of, you know, flat money or assets or whatever it is like this, then the tendency is it's not about using it to interact with people. You understand? So even here we talk about, oh, people are so personal in the modern, it's all about the people. It's not about the people. It's about getting the ideal that you want, and just that everybody can do that. That's the person part. The personal part is everyone's free. They're not unrestricted. You don't restrict them in any way socially or that they can't try to get anything they want. In other words, whatever quality they want, whatever forms they want, everybody should be free to try to get it. That's the point. You know, even if it means they step on everybody else's toes, hey, but you know, he wanted it. So the difficulty comes up is that the Lord therefore only responds with them as wealth. Mm-hmm. You know, and if it's in the form of flat money, it's that. If it's form of real estate, it's that. And that's how he does. So he does manifest, but it's still only Brahman through these forms, because we're only looking for him in mundane forms. Mm-hmm. But if we look for him as a person who's transcendental, he reciprocates with us as that transcendental person. So the person's the original. It's just that we only deal that much, so therefore that's how he interacts with us. So yes.
It appears that in the Vedas, this knowledge is very hidden, because in the second canto it is mentioned that Brahma, he studies Vedas 3 times.
Yes.
And first conclusion he came karma.
Right.
Then second jnana. Then only third, then he realized it's bhakti. Actually.
Yes.
So it took him, it's like a long process.
Yes. That's why it's the Bhagavatam is therefore recommended. That's why it said the Bhagavatam is the best of the Vedic literature.
So it's the most direct.
It's the most direct. Because the Vedas explain it, but you have to be super intelligent to catch it. Brahma figured it out, Narada figured it out. So Brahma and Narada are able to understand the Chintaveda Veda Tattva from the Vedic literature. And that is to be applied in bhakti. But what are the other sages? No. That's how there's Muni. Muni means they have their own philosophy. So Narada Muni is a Muni because his philosophy is bhakti. You know, he's the actual Buddha. Yes, no, it's there. It's done like that because you have to want it. You want it, you'll get it. You don't want it, you won't get it. Because it's something so valuable. Right? You don't leave, you know, diamonds out on the road. Right? They're locked up, they're hidden away. Right? You know. If they're in the window, you know, and lots of them, it is bulletproof glass. And if you'll notice, there is a guy at the door with a gun. Right?
There's this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaching to Sanatana Goswami about the Atmaram verse. And at the end of the explanation, he says, Lord Shiva will know, Radha Muni knows, Chaitanya Goswami may know. And all of this,
yes.
Different sages.
Yes.
Who will understand and who will not understand?
Yes. Yes. So that's why Lord Chaitanya has been. It's such a special thing that this understanding of the Veda is so easily available, but one still has to take it. And if one takes it, then one gets that benefit. That's what hasn't been given. With such ease, the essence of the Vedas is available. Yes.
Okay. It seems it's almost funny because it is funny because it's so unlikely that many don't take it. Simply because how can it be so easy?
Yes, that's also there. Because we're used to that, you know, if it doesn't hurt, it's not good for you. If it doesn't taste bad, it's not healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that kind of a thing.
We have to be stupid running around dancing like that, you know.
Yeah. No, but it's just, you know, it's because we've seen you have to work hard in the material world to get anything of benefit. So therefore, if it's not difficult, if there's not some, you know, difficulty, then it must not be of value. But this is the thing, is the difficulty is just focusing on that alone and not on this, because we're so used to this. Because you can't, and so the difficulty is you can go after that, but not with the mentality you have here. You have to give up this mentality to get it. But at the same time, as in the beginning, you can use the mentality as long as the ultimate point is not that mentality. This verse is a proof for the statement that the formless... Okay, we read that. The formless conscious Brahman is the effulgence, meaning conscious, because it's Krishna. So Krishna is conscious of everything because he pervades everything as Brahman. He also pervades everything as Paramatma. Right? So the whole cosmic creation is Brahman. The material creation is Paramatma and Brahman. So, you know, he's got it down. He knows what's going on. Okay, it's the effulgence of Krishna, who is condensed consciousness with a human form. I worship Govinda, possessor of great effulgence, whose effulgence is Brahman. How is the Brahman described? It is distinct from its vibhuti, such as earth, situated in millions of universes. Right. So vibhutis are its how you say it? What would you say? Vibhutis. Vibhutis. It doesn't come to mind, but I think it's like an opulence.
It is opulence.
It's opulence. Okay. So in other words, the opulence of Brahman is seen but manifest in the material form. Right? Because the point is that what you see, like he says here, earth, but now what does the earth do? The earth, it has a function. It's punya bhumi, right? It supports everybody. You can do things with it. Everything's made out of it. But those potencies of its support, that's Krishna. Right? If you can perform yajna, that's Krishna. You understand? But it's the material element of earth, that's then what it's manifest through. But at the same time, as earth is also a form of Brahman, inferior Brahman. Right? But here, because we're talking about the Brahma Jyoti, we're talking about the superior. Does that make sense? But, here's a, I think it would be a Purva Paksha. But the effects come from the Supreme Lord, not from his effulgence, according to statements such as Kamayata Bahushyam. The Lord desired to become many. The Brahma Samhita says the effulgence of the Lord is the cause of the effects. So in other words, he's the cause and he's the effect. But that effect is as Brahman, not as him as a person. Right? By the effulgence of the Lord, Prakriti becomes agitated and produces the universes. Footnote 5. This is perhaps a reference to the actions of Shambhu, Vishnu covered by light, with Prakriti described in Brahma Samhita. It's also the element of just his glance. That glance is going to be the element of effulgence. This is different from the Advaitins' concept of Brahman, which is without qualities, beyond description, and which is the lone existing entity. The Brahman described here, however, is endowed with qualities such as purity. It is describable and exists along with other real entities, since it is the cause of the universe, which is also real. So the Mayavadi's knowledge is extremely narrow, because they only know the description of Brahman and how it's not material. But they actually don't understand the description of Brahman and it's spiritual. So the transcendentalists, because they're endeavoring for transcendence, but as far as actually being situated transcendentally, it's very temporary, or if not even non-existent, right? At least an ideal. So we count them amongst transcendentalists when we talk about the social position or where we place them, or philosophical placement. But in reality, then they don't make it to the platform. According to the Advaitin, one cannot have faith in the Brahman because it is without proof. It is not subject to perception, pratyaksha, since it has no form or other qualities. It is not subject to inference, anuman, because it does not have a middle term for producing inference, right? Because you have to have a term in between that connects it. So there's no second aspect, so you can't have something. It has nothing connected to it, right? Fire and smoke can connect the two aspects, right? So within the fire, you have light, you have smoke, you have heat, right? You have all these different aspects, you can connect them together. But Brahman, there's only one thing, so there can be no middle inference, middle, what do you call it?
Term.
Term. There can be no middle term. So that's the difficulty. So you can't use anuman on it either. And pratyaksha, you can't perceive it because it doesn't. There's nothing there. So that's the fun part. You can't have faith in it either. But without faith, why would they make the endeavor? Right? But the point is having faith and making endeavors is technically Maya. So how is having faith, which is Maya, making an endeavor, which is Maya, get you transcendence, which is beyond these things? So in other words, their whole concept is totally wrong. It cannot be proved by testimony, shabda, since it lacks classification and other elements which are the basis of words. Because words are going to define. Nor can it be expressed figuratively, lakshana, since it is impossible to make figurative expressions when the object is beyond all words. Right? So since it's beyond words, then there's also the point, why are they talking? You know, so theirs is first take sannyas, then we'll talk. But our point is you know, when you stop talking, then we're talking. Then we can get towards reality here, right? According to this philosophy, such a Brahman cannot be the cause of creation, since it is devoid of power to decide to create. Right? There's no power, and it can't decide. Because that means you have to have qualities. Brahman would have to have qualities. But the Shastra is saying everything's from Brahman. And if we say everything's Brahman, that means what you see has to be Brahman. But they say because Brahman can't do that, what you see is illusion. But then where'd the illusion come from? So, you know, it just goes, it's like, you know, a dog and its tail. Right? The Brahman cannot be taught, since there's no teacher and student, only one Brahman. Right? So therefore, you know, the teacher Brahman and the student Brahman. You can't have that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying, well, it's all Brahman, but you can't have teacher and student. Mm-hmm. Because he can't be taught. Brahman can't be taught. Brahman can't teach. Brahman doesn't have a mind to teach. Right?
It doesn't exist.
Yeah, so that's the whole problem. But perhaps one can attain Brahman by using false conceptions of teacher and student, because right? They have to hold on. Okay. So then Baladev says, that cannot be accepted since realization cannot arise from illusion. Because right? Teacher and student is illusion. From that interaction, you're going to think and all that. You're using the illusory mind. with illusory intelligence, you know, and then coming up with that. How can you come up with Brahman from illusion? You know, it's like saying, I'll wash my hands of blood with blood. You can't do it. That's the difficulty. And where does the illusion lie? In the Brahman or in the Jiva? It cannot exist in the Brahman because it is impossible for illusion to exist in what is full of knowledge, right? Or full consciousness. It cannot exist in the Jiva because the Jiva did not exist before illusion influenced Brahman. Right? So illusion can't exist in the Brahman, so it can't be illusion.
No.
So, and the Jivas are only Brahman that is under illusion.
Yes.
So you can't have it from, the Jiva can't be there from that side because Brahman can't be illusion.
Yes.
And so it can't, the Jiva just existing is actually an impossibility.
Yes.
By their philosophy.
Yes.
And then the whole point of that, that illusion comes, it can't come from Brahman because Brahman can't be under illusion, you know, and it can't be the Jiva because the Jiva only exists if Brahman's under illusion. Right? Does that make sense?
So illusion came before Jiva.
Illusion has to be there before Jiva.
Mm.
Otherwise you don't have Jiva.
Because it's a product of illusion.
It's a product of illusion. And then if you say no, but the illusion came from the Jiva, then he wouldn't be there in the first place. Because he wouldn't exist.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Can't happen.
Yeah. Make that, yeah. So therefore from you know, this is Baladev. So very nicely from both sides you just show it can't function. You know, the monistic philosophy is inoperable. It doesn't have any foundation. It's not that it's got so much things that, well, this is another interpretation. No. Their concept does not, it doesn't work.
It's self-defeat.
It's not real. Yes, it's self-defeat. It's just, it doesn't exist. 225. I worship Govinda, possessor of effulgence. Oh, didn't we just read that? Oh, okay, so this is I worship Govinda, possessor of effulgence, whose effulgence is Brahman, with undifferentiated nature, by whose products are differentially manifested as the vibhutis, such as earth planet, which are displayed in billions of universe. The meaning is clear. Okay, quote. Indeed, I understand your intention. You say that Krishna is an avatar of the Lord of Vaikuntha, because he partakes of birth pastimes. Though he can be considered an avatar, he is actually of the lost form of the Lord of Vaikuntha, because he possesses an abundance of most excellent qualities. The Lord of the spiritual sky, whose excellence is described in the Shruti, Smriti, and great tantras, has unequaled powers. Previous to Brahma's creation of the universe, the Lord showed himself situated in Vaikuntha to Brahma during the first day of the first kalpa of Brahma. Okay, so Baladev says, this presents the proposition of the follower of Ramanujacharya.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we dealt with Vishrakshena, now we're dealing with Ramanuja. They consider Paramatma to have five forms, Para, Vyuha, Vibhava, Antaryami, and Archa. Right? Archa is the deity. Right? So now for them, Pancharatra is their main scripture. So Vedanta Sutra, Pancharatra, and the songs of the Acharyas. Their whole school or their whole temple is built on these three. Right? So then for them, this will be Pancharatric view. So the Archa is there, the Supersoul is there, Vibhava is there, the Vyuha and the Para. So Para they'll take as Mahanarayan. Vyuha will be the Chaturvyuha that comes from that. The Vibhava will be all these different expansions that are there, Leela and everything that you see there. Antayami will be the Supersoul, and then Archa. Right? So then, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Original Mahanarayan, Chaturvyuha, the avatars, Paramatma, and the deity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be explained here. Okay. Paras Narayana, the original Lord, Vyuhas are Vasudev, Sankarsha, Prajumna, Aniruddha. Vibhava forms are avatars such as Matsya and Kurma. Antayami is the form existing in the heart of all living entities and measuring the length of the thumb. Archa refers to deity forms like Jagannath and Sri Ranganath. Among the Vibhav forms, Nrisimha, Rama, and Krishna are the best. So they're agreeing that this is, okay, they're the best. Okay. Because Krishna possesses most powers among them, he is considered next to Narayan. He's considered the most, but, you know, Narayan is always on the top. The Vibhava forms are eternal. In order to refute this proposition, it is presented in this verse. I understand the intention of you who proclaim Krishna as supreme. You are saying that Krishna is the avatar of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Right? So they're saying, we understand your intention. What you're saying is that of all the forms of the avatars of the Lord of Vaikuntha, he's the best. And technically, they don't have any real problem worshipping Krishna like that. But they worship him as an avatar of Mahanarayan. Like that. So the songs of the Alwars, as we mentioned, three of the Alwars, the songs are about Krishna and Vrindavan. And one of the Alwars is only, they didn't write any other song other than Krishna and Vrindavan. Like that. So for them, this element of Krishna and Vrindavan is a very prominent element. So they don't have any difficulty with it. But they just think of all of the avatars, Matsya, Korma, Varaha, Nrisimha, then this is the best. That's, yes.
Why is it common knowledge in India for people to always accept that all the incarnations are coming from Vishnu?
Because that's the way it is, except for Swayam
Krishna. That's the way it is, but they never go beyond that.
It's like anybody. There's a point of which you go up to and you stop there. Everybody has to stop at one point.
Is it because it's convenient for them?
No, it's just a matter of the faith. Everybody does that. I mean, anybody in any sphere has to do that.
And they say Krishna. Vishnu is not coming from Krishna. Krishna comes from Vishnu. Therefore, Vishnu is God. Krishna is not.
No, or they'll say Krishna is God, but he's just an avatar.
Right.
But what I'm saying is everybody does that. See, only in the Vaishnava Siddhanta then you take it beyond that. It's just like in your quantumist, right? Everything goes back to a big bang, right? Now, if you calculate, it means, could you calculate in quantum how much energy it would take to take all the matter in the universe that they know up to now, and they only know part of it, and 9/10 is missing, they don't know where it is, and squash it into an infinitesimal point that you can't even see. How much energy would that take? Who can do that? But they don't look at that point. They only go up to that point, it's there. But who has the power to do that? You know? And guys in wheelchairs don't have it. You know? So then the point comes is that, where did that come from? And then it's there. Who's holding it there? Because you squash it, but the thing is immediately wants to come out. So is it only there for a fraction, a moment? No, they don't talk about it. It's just, it's there. It's existing. Then it explodes. And it comes out. But what the point is it means Newton's law defeats this. His third law, however much, it means that explosion that makes it go out, means you have to put that much energy in to get it to explode. Otherwise, where'd the energy come from? Everything's just a transformation of energy. That the energy was already there. Where did that energy come from? Where does the capital come from? You don't make the business on nothing. You know? So that's the whole thing. How is this working? Does that make sense? So everybody does it. They come up to a point and stop. Because if they don't, they'll just keep going around and around in a circle. You know, so that's why everybody, just for their own sanity, stops at some place.
So basically, it's for sanity's sake.
Yes, but it's based on faith, because everybody does it. But being what kind of faith you have, it you do that in a particular area and up to a particular point.
Yeah.
You know, that's where dogma comes in, because they don't want to talk about it, even though the scientists, you know, say that they're the what do you call it? What's that word they use? You know, with an O.
Objective.
Yeah, you know, the objective. And anybody else is subjective. But they're very, very subjective, because that's their dogma. You don't talk about that. You don't ask where all that energy, you don't ask about these things. As soon as you come, you're dealing with the emotions of a very frustrated, you know, mathematician. Because it all worked out, and in his world it's that, and they fight over whether the number's here or there, whether it's a dot or a line or this or that. and they kill each other over it. But as soon as you go past that, then their whole world disappears, and they become frustrated. And as soon as you lose your world, you lose your identity, you become angry. And so all you get is one very angry person. You know, who's no different from the, you know, guy down there that, you know, they went there and went to his, you know, diner that he always goes to, and they ran out of donuts. You know, it's the same thing. He's going to be upset. So, but somehow or another they think themselves. Everybody's the same. They're all the same souls. They all have the same nature. It's just by karma where they kind of situated themselves. But that's it. But, okay. But is Krishna an avatar like Matsyan Kurma? No. Krishna is called an avatar simply because he appears in the material world. Because avatar means to appear. So he did that. Because the point is they're not any of them. Matsya Kurma, they're not from here. They're from the spiritual world, but they come through. But he's appeared here, but not through that process. When Narayan shows slightly less powers, he becomes Krishna. Because he surpasses. When Narayana shows slightly less powers, he becomes Krishna. Because he surpasses Nrisimha and Rama in excellent qualities. You seem to be missing a quote here. Yeah, there should be a quote there. Narayan is then further described. Okay, so now Rupa Goswami continue, because this is the argument that will come up, right? Rupa Goswami is given this as the... So the Ramanujas may say, he said Vishwakshena may say, because he dealt with the Vaikuntha level, now he's going to deal with Ramanuja. Thus it is said in the second canto, the personality of Godhead, being thus much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, free from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. Srimad Bhagavatam 299. Right, so this is where they're getting that basis from. The Ramananda Charya. So it's that aspect is correct. Right? The Lord of Vaikuntha, having been worshipped with devotion by Brahma, showed Brahma his own planet in the spiritual world. It is worshipped by the residents who see it directly, because there is nothing superior to it. Since it is free of suffering, consisting of ignorance, false identity, attachment, hatred, and absorption, it is free of lack of discrimination, and it is free of the fear of falling from it. Text 203.
So this is confirmed. Nobody falls from it.
Yeah. No, it's just said nobody falls from it, and free of fear of falling from it. You know, it just doesn't happen. It means mathematically you could say it could happen, but it doesn't. You know. In that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any of their influence in goodness. Right? So they don't. They're not there. Goodness is not mixed with it. So you're only dealing with pure goodness. There's no predominance of the influence of time. So what to speak of the illusory external energy? It cannot enter that region because the material energy is the modes of nature with time. That's how everything functions. It's going to action is time. And then it's going to function under the control of the three modes. So if the three modes and time aren't there, the material energy can't be there. Both the demigods and the demons worship the devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.10. In this place, Rajas, Tamas, and Sattva mixed with Rajas and Tamas, as well as the influence of time, do not operate. Right, so you get that Rajas and Tamas, then Sattva mixed with Rajas and Tamas. So all that's left is Sattva. So Sattva and no time. There is no Maya, and what to speak of its products, such as Mahatattva and Ahankara. By this, the eternal bliss, right? Because Maya means even just the Pradhan. So then these are coming from Pradhan, Mahat and the false ego. By this, the eternal bliss, caused by the absence of time and Maya, in that place is indicated. So eternal bliss is coming because there's no time and no mind. The beauty of the inhabitants is then described the followers of the Lord are worshipped by the devatas and the demons, right? So they only, demons, devatas, they're not going to, they think they're the best, so unless you're better than them, then they'll respect you. And the demons, they only worship what's good. So that means this is better than either of them. 231. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha planets are described as having the glowing sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers. Here's sky bluish. So maybe we'll get that color from, right? Their eyes resemble lotus flowers. Their dress is yellowish color, and their bodily features very attractive. They are just the age of growing youth. They have four hands. They are all nicely decorated with pearl necklaces, with ornamental medallions. And they all appear to be effulgent. Some of them are effulgent like coral, vaidurya, or lotus fiber. And some wear earrings. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.11-12. They are youthful and are ornamented with jewelry with the best gem shining brilliantly. Nishka is a type of ornament. Some have complexions like coral, pink, vaidurya, multicolored, or white like the lotus fiber, since they have attained similarity to the color of the Lord that they worship. Text 232. The Vaikuntha planets are also surrounded by various airplanes, all glowing and brilliantly situated. These airplanes belong to the great Mahatmas, or devotees of the Lord. The ladies are as beautiful as lightning because of their celestial complexions, and all these combined together appear just like the sky decorated with both clouds and lightning. So the clouds are the airplanes, and the lightning are the ladies in the airplanes.
They are in charge. They are in charge.
Of course. They always have been, always will be. Just have to get used to it. And all these combine. Okay. Everywhere on the planet there are air vehicles belonging to the inhabitants. The planet shines with effulgence of the best of with effulgence of the best young women. The planet is like the sky filled with clouds flashing lightning. Because they wear dark blue cloth, their complexions are like the lightning. Text 233. The goddess of fortune in her transcendental form is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet, and mounting a swing, being praised by the spring and other seasons, she sings the glories of the Lord's activities. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.14. In that planet, Lakshmi, with spiritual form, worships the feet of the Lord with a variety of articles of worship. Or Shir Rupini can mean she is incarnate of wealth. She is then described, having mounted a swing and being praised by spring and other seasons. She sings about the activities of her dear Lord. Right? So people, you know, are worried that fans and other people will appreciate or something. Here, the seasons are glorified. Now that's got to be good, right? Everyone glorifies spring and uses it in their poetry, but spring's glorifying Lakshmi, right? So, okay, so then, having seen the place, Brahma then saw the Lord of that place. The Lord is described in this verse. He saw the master of all the devotees. The source of that pleasure is the Lord, the embodiment of pleasure. Those who worship that Lord are called Satvatas. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.15. Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the entire devotee community, the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, and the Lord of the universe, and who is served by the foremost servitors like Nanda, Sunanda, Prabala, Arhana, who are immediate associates. The personality of Godhead, seen leaning favorably towards his loving servitors, his very slight, intoxicating, and attractive, his very sight, intoxicating and attractive, appearing to be very much satisfied. He had a smiling face decorated with an enchanting reddish hue. He was dressed in yellow robes and wore earrings with a helmet on his head. He had four hands, and his chest was marked with the lines of the goddess of fortune. Srimad Bhagavatam 2916. Dhrigashashvam means he who intoxicates the eye with his beauty. He is marked on the chest with the line representing Lakshmi, Shriya.
The spiritual world is full of variety, and that variety is unlimited and eternal. And yet in the scriptures they are very specific. Is it just for the human mind to kind of grasp a specific image? Because those images are repeated in all throughout the scriptures.
Because this is your basis. Means in other words, variety is just like, what do you have variety in? Variety is, okay, today, let's say, the cauliflower is the soup and the broccoli is the vegetable. Tomorrow, the broccoli is the soup, the cauliflower is the vegetable. The next day, both of them are the soup and the pumpkin is the vegetable. But, you know what I'm saying? But it's not the variety means one day you come in and then sitting there, you know, on your plate is this very nice, unwashed piston. You know, it still has the oil and everything on it sitting there, you know. You understand?
I wasn't expecting that.
And the fun part, you could see it, right?
I thought you'd come up with a pizza or something, a piece of engine.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, is that the variety is within what's it, within a particular capacity, just like music. There's seven notes. Those seven notes have their breakdowns of how much half and quarter notes. So you can end it with 22, but it's actually only seven notes. And with that, you can make unlimited music. Not numbers. There's only nine, but you can make unlimited numbers. So in the same way as you have these, but you can make unlimited variety.
Like, for example, when the Bhagavatam describes how the ladies are dressed, how Krishna is dressed, it seems they always, I mean, they don't always wear the same sari.
No, they wash it, don't worry.
I mean, they do wear saris. We don't hear of them wearing something else.
Why do they need to wear something else? There's unlimited saris. Because if you go to shop, to every sari shop in India, you're going to deal with hundreds of thousands, millions of saris. You'll never, you know, see anything that's exactly the same. So that's the whole point. It's just like if you hum a few bars of some music, you know what it is. You know, and so that means it hasn't been compromised by something else. You know, in the 10, 50, 100, 500, 1,000 years. Like that, you know. So that's the whole point, is that its uniqueness still remains. That's the Lord's potency. So it's very far. Krishna Radharani is cooking and unlimited, and it never changes. So this idea that it has to be gross is for people who don't understand. I'll give you an example. So Didima here would be cooking. And so, because she was the best cook, so during the GBC meetings for the 2 weeks that they were here, she would cook for the GBC. So the best of the offerings is the noon offering, you know, that Raj Bhog. And so we would cook exactly what we would cook for the deities, just in volume enough for the GBC. At that time, there were only 24, so that's all you had to feed. Right there. Okay? And so now that means it was, you know, that this fine Bengali cooking, where it's like I said, is whatever's in season, every day it's cooked. It just moves around and which preps it's in and how you put the preps together and all those kind of things. So for a Bengali gentleman, then during that 2 weeks, what they got was completely varied, and they would have appreciated what variety is here. But then, you know, a few years of this, and then one time one kind of had, you know, every day we have cauliflower. Even though one day it was pakoras, one day it was a sabji, one day it was with the cheese. You know, it kept moving and everything. So you never got the same prep twice in that 2 weeks. They say every day is cauliflower. So I went to Bhavananda and said, what am I supposed to do? We're creating all this variety. And they can't see it. They can't understand it. Like that. He says, no. He says, you have to make it where they don't see something for some days. But he says, but then you drop the standard, because then you have to use, you know, vegetables that aren't your utmost ideal. You know? And come up with it like that. And he says, yes, but that's what you got to do. So I thought, okay. So we tried it. And then we did it. And then at 3 days later, they hadn't had cauliflower for 3 days. After 3 days, they went, oh, cauliflower! And I'm sitting there going, you know, going over and banging my head on the wall. So that's the whole thing. So this idea that, you know, that you're doing the thing, that you have to change it to so much more, you know, okay, you know, he gets tired of Indian, you know, doesn't Krishna every Mexican? I mean, every day he's eating Indian. You know, what about, you know, Italian? Yeah, what about the stuff that, you know, the Navajo Indians cook? You know, what about the stuff that the, you know, down in the, what do you call it, the guys living on the poles down in the swamp, what do they cook? You know? And it does have a little something happening, because they were French who were from up north in Canada who eventually like that, you know, but...
Creole.
Yeah, the Creoles, you know, they're cooking, you know.
Creole.
You know, you understand Bindi. And then you take Bindi and make it slimy, and that's the prep? It's called gumbo. Yeah, so, you know, so that's it there? You know, so what does this mean? So in other words, when people say this, that, oh, it's got to be this, it's got to be that, that means it's only within the sphere of what they like. I got tired of this and that, you know?
So it's the modes.
It's the modes
of nature. Creation of the modes.
Because the guy, it means they go from Taco Bell, they go down to the other place, they go to this one, but that. But are they going to the Lebanese place? Are they going to the Vietnamese place? Some people are. The ones go through there, they don't go to Taco Bell. You know, so that's the whole thing, is everyone functions in their modes. Krishna's beyond the modes. Because whatever you're looking for in the taste is already there in the Vedic. So it's a matter of there's a taste there. You already get that in the Vedic. So everything that, so these are all elements of that, and they're all there. So you don't have to change the major concept. It's just you have such knowledge that you can change the inside. That's the, and so they can do Radharani can do that unlimitedly.
But it's also Chintamani, right?
Yes, but Chintamani, that Krishna doesn't need to have a burrito that's, you know, doesn't have much flavor to it. You know what I'm saying? You have to roll up the chapati and hold on to it. Why can't I just put it down and break some piece off and eat it? You know, if you do that, it's called chapatis and rajma. Means they have it in India. It's a popular thing in the winter. Yeah, you know, Westerners eat it any time, even if it's hot out. They're eating burritos. Means then they wonder why they get more hot. You know, no, you only eat these things in the winter when it's cold. You know,
you can walk around with them.
Yeah, you know. So who wants to walk around? You want to sit down, nice conversation, interact. If you want to walk around, because they can't, eating's not, doesn't keep them busy. Talking with someone doesn't keep them busy. So you have to walk around with somebody doing a third thing. That's not relationship. So people are conditioned to the impersonal, and then they're claiming, oh, this is personal. It's not personal. Two people sitting and watching TV, where's the personal? It's not about them, it's about the third party. If there's no third party, let's see how many friends you have in the world. Right? Basically, the third world would survive. But your first world might collapse.
It is collapsing.
That's another thing. That's another thing. But you understand? So that's the problem. Is then, and then we say that, no, it says these things are inferior. Oh, they're so far superior that
they can't see it.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The interesting things are the white terminologies for everybody else are all derogatory, like they're lower. Right, and all the rest of the world, their terms for the white man is ones that they don't understand. They don't have culture. They don't have. They're not about that they're lower. It's just they don't understand. You know. Is that, you know, it's not like, oh, you know, white man, you can't have a relationship with a black man because it's inferior. The Hispanics will say you can't have a relation with a gringo because they don't know how to have one. So does that make sense? So that's why we have to be very, very careful when we use the modern, especially if modern means first world. Because then you have to go back to what Gandhi said. When they ask him, how do you like Western civilization? He said, that would be a great idea. Yes.
In the Vaikuntha Loka, is Shanta Rasa very prominent?
Yes. Shanta and Servitorship. They're quite prominent. So you have all kinds of... And in here, when we get into Brihad Bhagavatamrita in next year, like that, then we'll see. They give a very, very detailed what goes on there, the kind of people, you know, like that, and what they do, and everything. So you'll see that a lot.
In a couple of verses on the last page, you're just talking about what the devotees look like. Yeah. They didn't mention any service.
No, because Bhagavatam will get into that later, because now we're just trying to show the position. Okay. 234, the Lord was seated on his throne and was surrounded by different energies like the 4, the 16, the 5, and the 6 natural opulences, along with other insignificant energies of the temporary character. But he was the factual Supreme Lord, enjoying his own abode. So in other words, he has all the great qualities. But and then the material, those things are there insignificant, you know, like that. But, you know, everybody's worshipping him. 2.9.17. He was situated on a royal throne, worshipped by all surrounded by his energies. The 4 energies are Hladini, Kirti, Karuna, and Tushti. The 16 are the 7. Shri, Bhu, Kirti, Ila, Lila, Kanti, Vidya, plus the 9, Vimala, Utkarshini, Jnana, Kriya, Yoga, Prahvi, Satya, Ishana, and Anugraha. The 5 are Shankhya, knowledge, yoga, vairagya, tapas, austerity, and bhakti. This makes 25 energies. He is also endowed with his own portions, which are not the ordinary material qualities, such as dharma, jnana, aishwarya, and vairagya, which are temporary in Brahma and others. The rest is clear. So in other words, those energies that others can have, you know, temporarily in small quantities, those are there in him. Great. 235. Because it is superior to all other places, because it is devoid of the 5 types of kleshas, starting with avidya, footnote 6. The 5 kleshas are avidya, ashmita, raga, dvesha, and abhinivesha, ignorance, false identity, attachment to enjoyment, repulsion, and clinging to life with consequent fear of death. These are listed and defined in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. Ignorance means regarding the temporary as eternal, impure as pure, suffering as happiness, and what is not the self to be the self. Right? In other words, dropping off the edge of the roller coaster, and then calling that happiness.
Yes.
That's what he's talking about here. Right? Suffering is happiness.
Right? Yes.
Ego is identifying the soul with intellect. Attachment is a remembrance of pleasure and impulsion for pleasure. Repulsion is a remembrance of suffering and the impulse to avoid it. Abhinivesha means clinging to life. Because you think this is us. Okay? So that's the problem. It doesn't mean that you're not protecting yourself, but that's your duty. But clinging to life despite everything, that's the difference. Okay, so this is devoid of the 5 types of kleshas, is devoid of fear of falling, and is never devoid of power of discrimination. It always has the power of discrimination. It is praised by those who see that place directly. The Bhagavatam verse, because mostly if you're in a place and that's where you are, you may or may not think much of it. But here, those who live there, they praise it. The Bhagavatam verses are explained by the author. Some can see the place directly because they are fixed in prema. In that place there are no rajas, tamas, or sattva mixed with rajas and tamas, and no gunas of prakriti, as well as no influence of time, which destroys everything. There is no maya, which is the highest cause of all problems. What to speak of maya's transformations, such as mahatattva? Thus Vaikuntha is described as eternally perfect. And so Maya's transformations, these temporary, they just don't exist there. Here it says that sattva mixed with rajas and tamas is absent in Vaikuntha. Therefore, Vishuddha sattva is present. Quote, your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge and devoid of passion and ignorance. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.27.4. So, is this Vishuddha sattva material? This is negated by saying there is no Maya in Vaikuntha. Thus, on the contrary, when it says there is Vishuddha sattva, it cannot be material, but pure knowledge, which is self-revealing. Moreover, it arises from the spiritual Shakti of the Lord, which is threefold, Ladini, Sandini, and Samvit. Vishnu Purana 1.12.69. In many scriptures, such evidence is found. Right. So here we're getting the Haladini, Samvit, and Sadini. So these things. So it's he's making the point. Many scriptures, this is there. So this aspect. So that's a very major aspect of our philosophy. 237. In that place, the Lord's associates are black, reddish, green, or white in complexion. By worshipping the Lord with a particular complexion, the devotee attains a form with a similar complexion. Or in the case of Nitya Siddhas, of course, the complexion is eternally the same. By worshipping the Lord who is black, red, green, or white, one attains a similar form with a similar color. So that whatever is the form of the deity, then one attains that. Like, let's say, Nrisimha who's white, then one would attain the white color. You know, or Sweta Varaha, you'd attain that. You know, the Yagya Varaha is red, you'd attain that. So that's the form. So that's why, if you're worshipping the Lord who has the blackish color, you would attain that color. But because he has all these other colors, if you worship those aspects of him, you'll attain that color. In that place, the very personification of wealth, arising from a portion of Lakshmi, performs service using various treasures. Kusumakara means the king of seasons, spring. Shri, though praised by the spring along with the summer, monsoon and other seasons, praises the activities of her lord. Gayatri is a present participle. Participle form with feminine ending. So even though she's praised by such a greatness, she's still praising the Lord. Right? So it's not that in that situation where she becomes the center of attention of these others, that her attention still is not deviated from the Lord. What manner of Lord did Brahma see? That Lord was nectar for the eyes. The Lord was called nectar because he intoxicated the eyes with intense bliss. The yellow cloth indicates also the darkest blackish complexion. Being worshipped describes the yoga peat. This will also be described later, by quoting from Padma Purana. Okay, so when he's sitting and he's being worshipped, that's the yoga peat. Right, so then we can see is that it's interesting than that one where the Gaurartik song in the evening. That's the yogpeet of Lord Chaitanya. Because then the Panchatattva is there, Brahma is then serving, Shiva is there, Shuka is there, like this. So then it works like that. Text 242. The four energies are Hladini, Kirti, Karuna, and Tushti. The 16 energies were listed previously. The five energies are the group of five vidyas, starting with Shankya. These are listed in the Pancharatric texts. The five parts of knowledge by which the learned know the Lord are Shankhya, Yoga, Vairagya, Tapas, and Bhakti. Because through these, then they get to know the Lord. Now, of those, Bhakti is the most powerful. If you use the other four to support Bhakti, then it's very quick, very efficient, yes.
Do they get better and better from Shankhya, or are the four just one group of inferior?
Shankhya is your analyzation, yoga is that connection with the Supreme, seeing your connection. Vairagya means giving up the material. Tapas means performing your prescribed duties.
Yes.
So it doesn't specifically, they may.
I mean, usually we would say that yoga would be better than Shankhya because it's put into practice, no?
That's there, but then performance your prescribed duties. So you could say it goes like that. Because if you're yoga, but you're still attached, so you could put it in that way. But the point is
practice.
It's bhakti. It's not that these will get you bhakti. that will get you an understanding of some understanding of the Lord, because these are ways to which the Lord can be known. That means He will reveal Himself if you follow them. But if you want to know Him as a person, it, with affection, then it has to be bhakti.
Yes.
Otherwise, you just know Him as supreme. That's all. But we use all of these. Mm-hmm. And we see we're always talking about it. We're analyzing. We're talking about yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, buddhi yoga. Mm-hmm. We're talking about vairagya, giving up that result. We're talking about the performance of duties, austerity.
And as we progress, we will be able to give them up. Because
the point is no, we just use them very nicely.
Yes.
Point is they're all part of bhakti. We, in the beginning, see them as separate from bhakti. We see there's analyzation, there's bhakti. But the point is it's said that the Vaikuntha is free from the problem of lack of discrimination.
Yes.
Everybody there can discriminate very nicely. Mm-hmm. So it's just part of the devotional process. Everybody's performing activities with their body for the Lord. They're using their intelligence how to do something better for the Lord, seeing that relationship with the Lord. So all the different systems are already there. Okay. Thus the Lord is eternally surrounded by 25 Shaktis and by the parts called Aishwarya, Dharma, etc., which appear extraordinary. And on the other hand, available in only small amounts in Brahma and others. Right? So that's the temporary manifestations that they were describing before. The Lord gave pleasure in his abode of Vaikuntha. Right? So here you can only get very small amounts, and that's in Brahma and others. You know, that doesn't mean my friend or something around here. It means these ones, it's in minute, so how minute are manifesting we are. So how great is Vaikuntha?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That Lord gave pleasure in His abode of Vaikuntha. Or, Dharma can refer to Lakshmi, who is referred to as His own form, since she arises from His very Sarup. So, Dharma can mean her, because she is the one who manifests everything. You know, what you see is because she is through her arrangement you're able to see it. Right? In other words, you can see the Lord because Lakshmi has arranged the form. Right? Because the point is why can you see that form, as we were discussing before? Because you're relating to that form. So Krishna reciprocates with you in that form. But how is that done? That's done through His internal potency. So if she's not arranged, you won't see it. So that's the whole thing. Is that is so. Therefore, she can be called Kama, right? She is, you know. In other words, what you see, that place of activity—that's her. Either Brahma saw the Lord giving pleasure to others in Vaikuntha, or he saw the Lord giving pleasure to Lakshmi. But how can Lakshmi be the abode of the Lord? It is because the word Dhamma also means form. Maidini says, Dhamma means body, house, or rays. Right. So that's the... There. Thus, in Bhagavad Tantra, it is said, there's no difference at all between the Shakti and the possessor of the Shakti. Though non-different, they are described as having their individual will. But Lakshmi is not the Lord. To answer this, a scriptural proof is given. Ladani Shakti is Lakshmi. Quote, but how can you say that because Lakshmi and the Lord are non-different, their forms must also be completely non-different? End quote. Okay. Because the power of Visesha, there will be a perception of difference. As in the case of, quote, unquote, existing, end quote. Although they are non-different, Shakti is described as having her own will because of the power of Visesha, the power of objects to produce apparent differences which can be described as such. Right, so that we go to that point before, that comes up again, is that if they're non-different, how can you say that they're different and actually have different forms, different wills? That's Visesha, that's the specialness. So the Lord is everything, but that uniqueness where it's just the Shakti with her own will, that's Lakshmi. Even though it's the Lord, it's Lakshmi. And that's different from Krishna as the masculine principle and his free will. In the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda it is said, between the material realm and the spiritual sky, the splendid river called Viraja flows with water produced from the perspiration of the Vedas.
Interesting.
Beyond the river lies the place called Tripada. This supreme abode is eternally sweet, because Tripada, because what's on this side of Viraja is the Ekapada. Mm-hmm. Right?
Cool.
This supreme abode, means the Tripada, is externally sweet, young, and eternally blissful. This abode of the Lord is Vishuddha Sattva, full of pastimes and without decay. Right? When you build something new, its niceness is its freshness, its newness, its youngness. Mm-hmm. As long as that maintains, you'll consider, oh, this is nicely maintained, this is good. But, you know, even though it's hundreds of years old, but it looks, you know. But as soon as it actually looks like it's not young anymore, then, you know, it's run down, or, you know, known as a slum. Right? So like that. It's amazing how in India they can build it and it already looks like a slum. Even though it's smooth. Yeah. No, they can always build, you know.
Yeah.
Fresh.
Yeah, fresh. This abode of the Lord is Shuddha Sattva, full of pastimes and without decay. It does not undergo transformation and is as effulgent as millions of suns. It is all the Vedas without contamination and is never subject to destruction. It is truth beyond measure, without old age and devoid of the stages of material consciousness. Right? So it's beyond measure. You can't tell how big it is. That's why when we talk about Dwarka, we'll give it. It basically manifests that it appears to be 10 miles by 10 miles. But in actuality, it's unlimited. Otherwise, how does everybody fit there? Right? And devoid of the stages of material consciousness, walking, while waking, sleeping, and deep sleep. It is pure consciousness, the abode of liberated souls, and produces the bliss of Brahman. There is nothing equal to or superior to this place. It is without beginning and end, and is full of beauty. It is astonishing in its effulgence, pleasing and eternal. It is an ocean of bliss. The supreme abode of Vishnu is full of such qualities. There the sun, moon, and fire do not shine. Having gone to the supreme abode of the Lord, one does not return. Right? So it's not that you need sun, moon, or fire to create light. The abode itself is effulgent. Right? It's just like Krishna and Balaram, when they go into places where the gopis would hide the butter and that, butter and yogurt, then it's dark in there, because you go in, so it means you don't want to leave the door open, otherwise somebody knows something's going on. So you go in and close the doors. Dark, but because they're effulgent, then they can see everything and all that. So the gopis are complaining. Right? Having gone to the supreme abode of the Lord, one does not return. The supreme abode of Vishnu, which is ever fresh, eternal, and imperishable, is impossible to describe completely, even after continuing to glorify it for millions of Brahma's days. So it's a long time. Padma Purana 6, 255 to 57 through 64. Okay.
In other words,
it's nice.
It's good.
Yeah. Okay, we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Jainatai Gaurudhi. So one may wonder why go through all this, but the point is if this is so great, then what is the meaning of where Swayam Krishna is? You know, it's in just a whole different category.
Yeah. It seems that the Acharyas, they don't describe so much the material world, but just the levels of spiritual.
Yeah. Because the material world is that, you know, even if you describe it, someone's going to differ with that. Yeah. You know, just like, I remember it was very interesting. Because when I was a kid, I remember once, I can't remember what grade it was, seventh grade or something, then you know, you have to read all these, you know, they have their standard set things to read. And one of them was a setting in New York of a kid getting involved in a gang, what he went through, this, that, his initiation, and this and that. And so, you know, that, I just, you know, from that, I thought, this is not good. And then when in 74 we came to India, then we came through New York. Everybody in America, or, you know, I mean, in that side, Canada, everybody met in New York and then caught the plane from there to India. And so then, you know, seeing New York, I just thought, this is hell. You know, just there was this stuff. It was this is bad. You know, then when I came to India, little did I know that the only people in India are New Yorkers. You know, so then after hanging out with them for so long, then so many years later when I went back, I thought New York was nice.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. So that's the whole point. That's why you don't describe the material world much, because everybody has a different opinion. You know, so what one guy says is great, the other guy says, you know, some people say Jersey's great. Other, you know, if you live on the other side of the river, they'll say, you know, what do you mean? Where's Jersey? You know, so like that. You know, it's just the way it goes. Okay. Thank you. So,
stuff.
No need to describe, because everybody has their own idea of what it is anyway. Even if you say, no, it's not actually like that, you know, so therefore you just, you know, birth, death, old age, and disease, that you kind of have to say, okay, that's pretty common.
Right?
Yeah, there's variety. Come on, birth, growth, you know, maintenance, reproduction, dwindling, death. So come on, that's lots of variety. You know, like that. And then, you know, sleeping, okay, I mean, mating, that was in there. But then you have eating, sleeping, and dependent. So add that on there. So then you have 6 and 3, 9. All right, you know, this kid's growing, it's getting better all the time.